Our first speaker is Ian.
Hello, I am Ian F. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm also an anorexic and bulimic. Very glad to be here. I wish I could see you all, but I'm glad to know that you're in the virtual space today. I'm going to talk very briefly because I don't have a ton of time about my disease, and then I want to talk about being a young person in a way. I have starved myself. I have purged via exercise. And I have eaten compulsively. I did all of those things from when I was a small child up until I was an adult. But what I think has defined my disease more than anything is that I've always felt really apart from everyone else. And the only thing that ever made that feeling go away was to eat sugar or starve myself or wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and run 4 miles. And that is at its core what our disease is. We talk a lot about food. We talk a lot about how we abuse food and about how we abuse our bodies. And that's important to talk about. But I think with our disease, what's really heartbreaking and what's to me the most painful part is that I feel like there is something wrong with me that needs to be remedied. You know, I eat when I'm not hungry, but I also look for worthiness when I already have it in the first place. And that's how I'm wired. So my body has been starved. I've been 80 pounds, so skinny that you could see all of my bones when I took my shirt off at the pool. And I have binged so badly that I was bloated and I couldn't walk and I was sick every day. I'm 21 years old. My knees crackle like Rice Krispie treats every time that I go upstairs because I overexercised, you know. And I am always, when I get a big head in program, humbled by the fact that I can't trust myself to know what to eat for lunch. My sponsor told me that today. We were on the phone. And I told him that sometimes I feel a pressure to be this OA wonder boy. And the reason that I feel that is because I have been told by people when I speak, when I do service at meetings, when I'm at conventions, you are the future of OA. And I want that to be true. I hope that I am going to be here for a very long time, that I never have to hurt myself with food again. But it's not a guarantee if I don't work this program. And that's what I want to speak about today more than anything, is that permanent recovery from compulsive eating is possible. This is not something that I have to die from. All of the literature says that I can have permanent recovery, and here's how. And the how is the steps. I admitted I was powerless over food. So I came in and I told a sponsor, when I start eating, I can't stop. I want to stop and I can't. And I was thoroughly convinced of this. I didn't have a question in my mind that I needed this program. That's step one. I got abstinent. That took me a very long time. I joined OA when I was 17. I got abstinent when I was almost 19. For me, abstinence looks like I weigh and measure my food. I don't eat sugar, flour, dairy, or nuts. That's my abstinence. That's the baseline. And I think it's also important to say abstinence is essential to doing the rest of the steps, because I can't be spiritual and drunk at the same time. Most of us think that we can because we're drunk, but we can't. You have to be sober physically before you can be sober spiritually. And the rest of the stuff is the hard stuff. Step two is very difficult. It's coming to believe that something that I cannot see, cannot touch, cannot feel, cannot hear, cannot smell, I guess, is going to save me from a problem that has defined my life up until this point. And then step three is even harder. I'm going to somehow entrust my entire life to that thing. And if there's the most important thing I can say about that is faith is taking action, not knowing that it is going to work. And that is why we don't have to understand what a higher power is. In fact, I think if you do understand what your higher power is, not a good enough higher power, because my disease is in my brain. So if my brain can wrap itself around something, that thing is not big enough to save me. And that changed my life. Like that idea that I didn't have to understand everything. Not how I operate normally. Because I'm a bulimic. If you point me at a food item, I can tell you how many calories it is and how long it will take me to burn it. So when the idea that I don't have to control something comes up, blows my mind. Crazy. Once I have an ability to let go of that need for control, I can start to take an honest look at myself. That's what step four is. You know, there's a formula for it, but it's essentially I take a look at all of my defects of character. Who have I been up to this point? And then I tell someone about it. And for the first time, I am completely honest about who and what I am with another human being. And once I've done that, then I can let myself go. What's crazy is you become an entirely different person. And I had a miraculous experience with this. And I'm an acting student. And I was assigned this character for class who is selfish and manipulative and narcissistic and harms everyone around him. And he's incredibly immature. He's exactly what I was like in disease. And I remember sitting in class, getting notes on a scene, and my instructor goes, "Ian, what's wrong?" And I was like, "I just don't connect to this character at all." And then I had to laugh at myself because, of course, I know exactly who that character is, but it was a light bulb moment. This program makes you a completely different person. Completely. So you've inventoried who you are. I have inventoried who I am. I have let go. I've given that to another person and to a higher power. I make my amends to people. I set right the wrongs that I did. And then I spread the message the best that I can. You know, and that looks like me speaking right now. That means having sponsees. That means what the interpreters and the Zoom host are doing. I share this any way I can. And I keep becoming a new person and I keep working the steps, and I keep being abstinent, and I keep accepting that I don't have control over things, that's recovery to me. And my age is irrelevant to that. That's all I've got. Love you guys.
Thank you, Ian. Our next speaker, our second speaker is Phil.
Hi, I'm Phil. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I am grateful for OA. I'm a 35-year-old, 100-pound winner in the program, 5 years of abstinence imperfectly, and I'm under no illusion that if I pick up again, I will be recovering from the grave. No question about it. And I grew up poor. My parents didn't cook, they burned everything. I was brought up on fast food. And I grew up as an only child on a farm south of Buffalo, New York. And I was basically alone with the cows. That was my entire childhood. So food became my higher power. I had numerous binges during childhood. Valentine's Day of 2001 might have been the worst. After a massive binge of sugar, I had a seizure. So I've had lots of medical problems too. By college, I got up to 400 pounds and I could barely walk across my dorm room. I couldn't go to classes and I was miserable. I always focused on my coursework. I was an engineering student and I always thought that I could engineer myself out of this disease. I took courses in nutrition science. I did the diets, everything. Nothing ever worked. That year, the first year of college, I lost 150 pounds to put it back on again. And, I was basically insane. That's my story. Lots of insanity trying to fix myself and fix all of the problems. And I always ended up failing myself. And what felt like everyone around me. Did everything I could to have friends because I was alone as a kid. So I knew that something with friendship might help me, but even that didn't work. So that's kind of my history. I moved to New York City in 2011 for my first job. I live here now. I've been here many years. And after I moved, I thought, well, walking would help me again. Well, I ended up with a lot of anxiety and dizziness. My vision would literally darken. I couldn't see. Like these attacks would happen, it would feel like I was falling. The Brooklyn Bridge, famous landmark, I was walking across it one night, and Manhattan went black. And it felt like the bridge was falling. And I was probably about 375 pounds at the time. And, that's where I was. And it was very difficult. The doctors weren't helpful. They diagnosed every single disease that a typical obese guy like myself would have. So in 2019, I walked into OA in a room in Times Square. That was my first meeting. And that was when I really felt like I walked into home. That's when I first felt love. Friendship, and I felt like I wasn't alone. This program's taught me that I'm not alone. I share this disease, and I went in there looking for what I have in common, not what my differences were. I was the youngest guy in the room, person in the room, really, and I was younger by at least 10 years, but I still felt a connection that night. And that night I was asked, so I got a sponsor, and that sponsor asked me to read the big book cover to cover, underlining three words: should, must, and willing to. I did it, and I learned so much. I learned I've lost the power of choice. I have a phenomenon of craving. I am trying to run a show. I'm trying to arrange the lights, the ballets, the actors, the actresses, everything. And what usually ends up happening doesn't work out because people do not follow my will. I was literally playing God. And for me, that was draining all of my energy. And what did I do? I would go back to the food and I would binge. That's why I got out of that first reading of the big book. What I also learned is when my sponsor released, I was taught to seek justice. And I, as a human being, was taught to seek justice as a motive. And the big book can be summarized in one simple word: beneficial, being of service to others and to God, to get out of my self-seeking, selfishness, self-centered ways, because that's basically who I was. I was trying to be a martyr, fixing everyone and everything is a deflection to myself because I hated myself. That's what it came down to. I hated myself. Food had a very powerful effect on me. Food was very powerful. It was both a sedative and a stimulant. And I had to understand the big book to understand that this combination was too powerful for me. This is why I could never put the food down. This is why I got up to 400 pounds. But what I had to do is learn to look towards something greater than myself, something that can restore me to sanity. That thing was my concept of God. The program has no shoulds or musts. My sponsors have always said, here's what I did. Maybe it'll work for you too. And for me, I have very loving sponsors that share their experience, strength, and hope. So today, I might be operating at the emotional age of a 10-year-old, maybe 11-year-old, because of my work and the steps. When I started, I was operating at the emotional age of 4. So I've grown up in program. I've grown up. I've got a long way to go. I'm 35. I have a lot of time. Time is on my side. In fact, sometimes I think of time as my higher power. I've also learned a powerful equation. Happiness is equal to reality minus expectations. That's because my expectations were high. I needed to tone them down to reality. That meant having a psychic change, as the big book puts it. And for me, that means praying for God's will for me. That means asking God, that tiny voice inside of me, about what does God want me to do? I give up. I ran myself into 400 pounds. My best thinking failed me. My weight doesn't fluctuate today. In fact, it's down quite a ways. I'm a 100-pounder. I have more to go, but it's one day at a time. This program's taught me how to love. This program has taught me how to grow up. This program has taught me that I'm negative. I'm a perfectionist. I have all the character defects out there. I had to look them up. In fact, I had to look a lot of things up in the dictionary. But as I did that, I grew. Nothing out there ever taught me how to grow up. And guess what? As I grow up more, the food, the cravings, they go away. Today, I abstain from fried foods. I abstain from sugars. The fried foods were my original absence in 2019. The sugar came later because initially the sugar wasn't a problem, but I had to work the program to learn that my choice of or drug of choice changed. So, absence has changed with the way I have changed. Nothing's constant in God's world, but every day that I keep working this program is a miracle. I don't feel alone anymore. I work on being compassionate and empathetic to others. I give service when I am asked, and I can't recover alone. There's lots of hope here. And they say, keep coming back. And for me, at least, my ego isn't my amigo. It needed a massive leveling. I'm just grateful here every day that I keep waking up, keep working the steps, praying to God, and generally working the program to the best of my ability. So I'll leave it there. Thank you so much for having me.
Hi, thank you, Phil. Our third speaker is Brian.
Howdy. My name is Brian V. I'm a compulsive overeater, anorexic, bulimic, exercise addict, amongst still other things. Identify as a young person. I came in at 25 years of age, 24 maybe, I don't know, 2016. I'm 32 right now. My birthday's in September. I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you for those who have shared before me. It was a delight to hear you. And I also qualify as being neurodivergent, so I have learning disorders. Makes speaking, it makes writing, it makes literature, it makes word comprehension difficult. I also identify with LGBTQ. I'm bisexual. So my childhood, intrinsically, I am the feeling that if I'm small enough, my anorexia tells me if you play small, if you don't press your boundaries too far, if you don't achieve anything, if you don't put yourself out there, I will be okay. And that's how I control. That's how I control my relationships. That's how I control my atmosphere, my environment, by being small. And as a young person with coming into OA as a young person and hitting unmanageability, hitting that rock bottom, step one of powerlessness. I didn't. There's something very disabling about building like on a crumbling foundation. I came into OA right after I graduated college. I learned how to read in middle school. I learned how to write in college. And so education has always been hard, but in college, I started to think of myself as not being worth the food that kept me alive. And I coupled that with an exercise addiction where I was running about 5 to 10 miles a day. And so in not consuming enough calories and having a caloric burn or a purge in bulimia terms, I was calorically in the negative every single day. And that gave me stress fractures, arthritis from the knees down. But it also gave me sudden cardiac arrest. So my heart stopped in 2014, September 19th. And so I know what it feels like to die. And unfortunately, I didn't enter OA until 2016. I still had some experimentation to do. And still had lots of experimentation to do because I had made a deal with myself or whoever it was that if I just gain weight, if everything will be fine. And what I didn't, from 2014, I stopped running and I also started to gain weight. I went from a BMI of 17 to 21, not a tremendous amount of weight, but it was around 40 pounds. And so at 2016, I realized that I still had diseased thinking. I couldn't stand what my body was feeling, and my deal that I made with myself just didn't work out. And so I entered away. I entered away, and people were talking about a plan of eating that didn't include a lot of ingredients, and I was like, that's weird. That was specifically why I didn't want to enter OA, because I thought they were going to take away my food, the only thing that was keeping me alive. While I was doing step work, I realized that, like other people have shared, I was able to put down my exercise. I was able to, what I thought was putting down my anorexia, and I thought I was surrendering into the horrible reality of gaining weight. What my disease termed at the time, like it was just a, minor surrender. And I realized that what I did in order to do that was to eat high calorie foods, foods that tasted good, foods that I could eat very quickly. And if I make my meal time as small as possible, and if I put my so many calories in it that I don't have to eat so much during the day, then I was still living under anorexic thinking because I don't like eating. It's such a chore in Lyme disease. It's such a chore. I can be doing so many other things because I don't think I'm worth it. I don't think that I deserve the time it takes to fuel my body so that I can effectively do the amazing things that I want to do in my busy schedule. And I think that other people deserve more. So I need to give it to them or get out of the way so they can have it. And so I adopted a plan of eating, and that was so scary. And through the support of this program, I was given tools by which I was able to recover by the fellowship, a support system. And that was really good for me. What's difficult about being a young person in OA is I didn't have a career when I walked into OA. I barely had a degree, but it was just a Bachelor of Science. And I wasn't married before I entered OA. And there's a lot of things that our young people are dealing with. Socially, vocationally, coming to age, figuring out who they are. And I got to do all of that while working the steps. So I got married when I in at 25, 26. I got to figure out who I was before I bonded with someone else. I got to find a job that I love. I got to keep the job that I thought that I couldn't have because I work in agriculture, so it's really busy, physically and intensive. And I had a panic attack 2 days into my job that I currently work, thinking this is really active and it's in my degree. If I can't do this, then my anorexia has taken everything from me. And I had to give to my higher power. One day at a time, see if it works. Feel your body. What does it need? What does your self-care look like? And it's a beautiful thing. Went and pursued my master's degree while in recovery. That's still a journey. Pursuing home ownership, pursuing like all the things, and it's a really great support system for which I can recover by. And I love how the steps were talked about. I'm going to start with step four, and I learned what my part was, and I also got to work through my traumas in my past, my incest, and what I let, the messages I let define me. And I got to work through what, how it affected me, you know, the who, what affects why, the four columns of the fourth step. I got to fully experience how my traumas had affected me, which was not a thing I was allowed to have growing up. I'd never processed that. And that was the best thing, in my recovery. I got to work through my step six character defect, which I got to look at my past history in the lens of compassion. And I got to comfort my inner children. The times that my trauma, times in my life where trauma hit me hard and I emotionally shut down. And I got to go back and reparent and re and be supportive and be there when I had no one. And my character defects are just survival mechanisms. AA 12 and 12 calls it survival instincts gone awry. And I got to look at that 9-year-old who was being victimized. I got to look at that 10-year-old who put all the pieces back together in the best way that he could, without knowing having any support. And I got to go back to that 18-year-old who was just so much rage and sacrificially put it into himself because he wanted to protect those who were around him. They cared so much. And I got to work on that rage. The anorexic, the exercise addict that runs 7,000 miles in 6 years. My exercise was fueled by self-hatred, self-punishment, and rage. And calmness is how I'm known today. And that is such a gift of this program. And I got to acknowledge again those character defects gone awry, and I got to reclaim them as my innocence, my dignity. I got to go to the people who I have harmed because I'd worked on all the stuff. So now I can just face them as them and not them as a perpetrator, them as an abuser, them as however I wanted to label them so that I could be justified in whatever I did and make amends, rewrite the contract that I live by, so that I don't victimize myself with my resentment any longer. And I am so grateful, so grateful. Taking that daily with step 10, having connection with my higher power, like my anorexia felt so pure. I felt like a saint in my anorexia. And now
Next
I get
time.
to have a relationship with myself, with my higher power, and everyone else, with my client channels cleared. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Thank you, Brian. We will now open the floor to questions and answer sessions.
I'll jump in as someone who's a relatively young person. I guess what's one thing you've really learned in OA, being in meetings with people of different ages? Because for me, it was really helpful to realize, oh, I don't reach a certain age and have to have it all figured out. Like, that was a big disappointment that I don't reach a certain birthday and become adult and everything's amazing and easy. But what about for you that's been really helpful for you learning from different age groups, insights?
Who wants to go first?
I can probably go.
Okay.
Still, compulsive overeater. For me, I have learned about the traditions. And the traditions in general ask me, how do I get along with other people? And especially tradition 10, neutrality, asks me to remain neutral. And that means that I look for where I have similarities. There are no outside issues. When I go into the room, I think about food. I talk about food. In fact, food is one of my biggest problems. Outside of the room, it's also taught me how to interact with the senior leadership at my job. In fact, I think some of them might be at an emotional age of four with me some days. So, OA has really taught me how to work with other people. And it's taught me that through a loving and kind way with my sponsor. And I'm grateful for my sponsors and fellows I call every day. I make at least three outreach calls a day to people that may not necessarily share my view on certain things. But this is a safe space where I can learn, I can make mistakes, and I can improve. And every day that I keep doing this work, I get better. And I can then carry it on to others. It's about carrying the message. Thank you.
Yeah, I have a dear friend of mine who told me once that she has no idea how to be of service to people my age. And at first that made me feel really lonely, but the truth is everyone is working the same program. So in terms of how to recover from compulsive overeating, anyone of any age can help anyone else of any age. There is some loneliness with being, personally, someone who is in college, dating for the first time, getting a job for the first time, going to parties, and not having the fellowship. And something that I have learned is that I'm supposed to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And part of step 12 is that I practice the principles in all of my affairs. And all that lingo means my program doesn't end when I leave a meeting. So when I go to parties, when I go to my jobs, when I go on dates, I'm still living the OA way of life. And I'll be honest, there's not a ton of people that I've been able to talk to in program who know what it's like to have a first job in abstinence, or to be dealing with certainly like sexual stuff as a young queer person in abstinence. And you know what? That's chill. It's a lot like step five. My sponsor, okay. My sponsor may not have experienced the same things, but they accept me, and that's key. Time is up.
Okay. There's a question from a newcomer. Do you think you'll want, need to be a part of OA for the rest of your life?
Part of my recovery in that 12th step, carrying the message of recovery to those who share my compulsions. And part of my living amends and amends to myself, which was I lived a life of I'm not qualified, I can't do it, no one should have trust in me. Those messages was to give service and to be a part of this fellowship. And quite frankly, like the trust that this fellowship puts in me is crazy. The first intergroup meeting, meeting above the meeting level, that I attended, I just so happened to be their elections. And I was voted in to be their vice chair. And I was only in 7 months, in this program, 6 months in abstinence. And that's my living amends. Because I learned that I could make risks, and I have a fellowship and a bunch of people that are there to catch me when I fail. And I learned that failing is not the end of the world. And I learned that I have the fear of success, which I used to think was the fear of failure. So yeah, this fellowship will be here, and I'm so glad to be a part of it.
So for me, when I first came in 2019, I thought I was going to come in, get whatever the answer was, and walk out. I'm still here 5 years later. The reason being, I got so much more. I found love, I found acceptance, I found fellowship. Some of my best, 5 years, or rather, they say your five closest friends sometimes are a representation of who I am. So, my five closest friends are who I am. Those friends have changed from some of the most negative, egotistic people that I know to some of the kindest, most loving people I know. Why? I changed. OA is now a part of my life, and I value going to meetings. I want to go to meetings. In the beginning, I thought in and out. Now, I can't wait to go to meetings to see my fellows, my friends, and some of the best people I've ever met in my entire life.
All right. The next question I see is, what was your experience the first time working step six or seven, or six and seven?
So, the first time I worked step six and seven, it was explained to me that after I do my step five, I take an hour of quiet and I consider whether the work I have done is thorough. And I was really freaked out. I was like, quiet? Do I, what? Can I fold laundry? Can I do something else? My sponsor was like, no, you have to sit there and it will be uncomfortable. And I think that's really important. Like, the steps are uncomfortable. And if you're really comfortable working your step six and your step seven, you are doing them wrong. Because you're basically saying, here's who I am, God. Take it. Make me a completely different person. And so, in that process, know that if you feel like you want to crawl out of your skin, you are doing it right. And the comfort with yourself will come at no determinate time. For some people, it takes hours. For some people, it takes days. For some people, it takes months. I've heard people who said it took years. And that's all okay. That's what I've got to say on it.
Six and seven, coming to the place of humble, of humility. It's not an easy thing to be humble. I thought I had false humility when I walked into this program. I was like, I am the most humblest person ever. And then I realized how much rage I had and how much, like, you can't be humble and self and hate yourself. Like, you just you can't. Because, I'm a martyr. And so my step six and seven was dealing with martyrdom, victimhood, self-righteousness, and resentment about, like, this is all the stuff I'm doing for you. Why are you not happy? Why are you yelling at me? good stuff. And really grateful that my sponsor had her qualifications and could speak to me in a way that I totally resonated with. Could speak into my victimhood, could speak into my fake nicety. Be like, you hate everyone you're around, but you treat them so nicely. I'm like, yeah. And she was like, you're dishonest, and it's nice that you're and taking my external persona and my internal persona and making them equal and shifting into this is how I want to be, this is how I am, and making my wants and ams the same. And to do that, again, step three is making a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of my God as I understand him. And it's a process. They say step three is your step one for your character defects.
The first time I went through six and seven, I looked at the big book and it was a single paragraph, three sentences about. And yet, I just flew through them. I said, yes, I'm a terrible person. Let's move on. I give up, God. That was my first experience. Quickly did I learn that my defects of character kept coming up again and again and again. And as I learned more and more about myself through the daily process of step 10, which says take a continuous inventory every day, I learned I have them all. But these were childhood coping mechanisms. I had to please my parents to get love. Today, when I please other people, I'm fine that I do it still to this day, and it's to get that love. So I have to pray to God every single day to remove it from me so that I can be better and I can be of service to somebody else, as the big book says. And every day that I do that, little by little, I have learned that steps six and seven are, in essence, the program, for me at least. It's what I have to live every single day without fail if I want to recover. And I have to ask God, I can't do this alone.
Thank you. Thank you to everyone who attended this webinar. Thank you to the speakers and to all those who are doing service.